Hey, CNFers. Today's episode is brought to you by my amazing monthly newsletter. That's right. Sign up for my reading recommendations list by visiting BrendanOmara.com and entering your email either in the smart bar, which is to say the smart bar, at the top of the page, or in the pop-up that'll come up in the middle, about 10 seconds into your sesh. On the first of the month, you'll receive a cool photograph I took, 4 book recommendations, a cool quote or two, links to any writing I might have done that I'm proud of, and links to the past month on the podcast. It's a tasty bit of goodness to start your month. Once a month, no spam. Can't beat it. Cue intro riff. Yes, I like that. Loping along here at CNF HQ. What the hell is going on, CNFers? Feeling a little bit better after last week's oral surgery. Sutures are still in there, but I can kind of talk and I'm not in quite as much discomfort. You know I've got a good show for you. When questions get this kind of response.
Oh boy.
That's Scott Campbell, better known as Scott C, also known as Scott Lava, across Twitter and Instagram. Scott is an author and illustrator, and his latest wonderful creation is Adventures in Drawing, a guided sketchbook. This thing is tons of fun. I love drawing as a way of unplugging my brain from my daily nonsense. It's a good way to kind of pivot from my stock and trade, whatever that is, if that's this or if I'm writing, sometimes having a notebook there to doodle is just a cool way to unplug. And this book almost gives you a little blueprint of how to do it and just to have some fun. His Instagram feed is chock full of his amazing and playful sketches and watercolors. His great showdowns, greatshowdowns.com, you can also find it at scottc.com, are hilarious and cute and fun. I won't do them justice by talking about them, but you should visit scottc.com. That's the letter C, Scott C. Or look him up on Insta at Scott Lava. We talk a lot about creative insecurities, comparing yourself to others, you know, his path as an artist, and also the importance of community in any artistic pursuit. I wish I had 2 hours to talk to Scott, but we'll have to make do with one. So maybe you can come out with a new book in the next year or two and we can get him back on the show. One other thing, are you subscribed to this pod? Go find it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. And if you're feeling kind or mean, leave an honest review on Apple Podcasts and share this with a buddy. Okay, now it's on to the show. Cue interview riff.
Now, early on, what was those conversations or the dialogues you were having when you're like, hey, mom, dad, you know, is an uncertain path, but I want to be an artist, an illustrator. What was that like in that moment when you decided you wanted to take a dive and go down this road?
Well, I mean, I was pretty fortunate to have, my mom was really creative, and she was painting and making things. She was always pretty productive on that. So I think early on, they saw how much I was loving it when I was really small, and they saw that my brother was more into music, so they put me in art classes when I was little and my brother in music. So that was like our little breakdown. So I've always been kind of like a little artist dude in our family. So I think it's just, it was never really something that we never really discussed it as like, oh, hey, you know, like, is this a viable career or anything like that? It was definitely just going to be that. Since the very beginning.
Yeah. You know?
So, cause we were pretty creative, and my brother and I did a lot of creative activities together. I was very fortunate to have a brother that we played together and we drew together, and we sometimes would make books based on our adventures that we played with together and our action figures and stuff. So, it was pretty creative environment.
Yeah. Early on, who was giving you the right pushes in the right directions that were saying like, oh, Scott, you know, you have a knack for this, you know, keep going, keep working on this and honing your skill set?
Well, really, my mom probably was the biggest push on it, to be honest. She was always the one that was trying to putting art materials in front of me and making me do that sort of stuff. But I guess I mean, and all through like school, like elementary school, even I was like just the artist kid. And I was always, I remember like in second grade, we had like the big contest to design the logo for the school. We were the Dilworth Dragons, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh man, this is my chance to show everybody I'm just such a good artist. And so I submitted like probably 10 designs, and a lot of them were plagiarized that I just copied out of other books and stuff. And I didn't win. Some other kid in fifth grade won. And I was just couldn't believe it. It was, I was like, oh, and that made me want to just like focus on being the best at drawing dragons. So then I was really decided I would master that. So, I mean, even early on, I was always the drawing kid trying to like do that. Oh, and I got an award. I got a little trophy at the local mall when I was 6 years old, like coloring in an Easter bunny. It was like my first and biggest trophy that I ever got. It was weird. And it was like just a haphazard. What I love about watching kids work, it was totally that way, where just like a million different colors. You know, the rabbit was purple, the tree was, you know, green. It was just nuts, you know, how kids think about it, which I guess is what makes me excited about watching kids work. But yeah, I mean, I was always doing that. And I went to, and I had a great junior high art teacher. My high school art teacher, Lee Akamichi, was just the most encouraging person ever. Like, he's still very encouraging, high energy influence. So I kind of always wanted to do it.
Yeah. Did you have a real aptitude for it at a young age, and then through rigor and hard work, you were able to really hone your skills, or was it something like you really had to work at it to manifest your talent?
I don't know. I mean, it's so early on. I was really working on it only because I loved it. You know, I just was drawing all the time, so I would naturally get better. But I think I did have this, like, I must have had some sort of natural thing where someone's like, dude, he's pretty good at drawing, like, this dragon or whatever it is, you know, like, he'd be good drawing this one thing. I guess there was a little bit of a natural bit of it. And I did trace a lot from my coloring books. I don't know if that helped train me, but like, I would like color the backs of my Star Wars coloring books. And then like, I would trace them and then bring them to school and say, oh, I drew this stormtrooper. Like, I freehand. And everyone's like, oh my God, really? I was such a little liar. But like, maybe perhaps that kind of helped me a little bit, like tracing something and copying something. Eventually, maybe you retain a little bit of that. But
that strikes me as a pretty good exercise to do, because you start to learn just the natural sort of contours and proportions that make certain things just look aesthetically pleasing. And you're kind of developing a muscle based on someone else's training. But then eventually you break off those training wheels and then sort of develop your own voice.
Totally. Yeah, that's how I feel about anybody when like that is kind of obviously influenced by a different artist or something like that. And like, oh man, you're just ripping off that artist. You know, it's at some point you'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, you should probably change. But I feel like when an artist is trying to establish their style, that's always seems like the big thing. Everyone's like, oh my God, how do I get my own style and all that? And I feel like that's the sort of thing that just comes naturally from drawing the things that you're influenced by and drawing what gets you excited. And I think eventually, even if your stuff is looking like somebody else's, I think eventually it comes into its own if you naturally, I would think. So I never get super bummed to see people that are totally biting someone else's style sometimes, but you know.
Yeah, I think that's the only way to really, that's how you develop a voice or the equivalent of an illustrator, is that you have to steal a little bit from the person A and person B. And then eventually over time, if you do the work and do enough repetitions, your own taste does sort of surface as a hybrid of all your influences. And then you become something wholly you.
Yeah, totally. That's what's an exciting part of the process, man. I love that.
Yeah, and I think that as we'll probably jump around a little bit, but that just what you're saying really, I think, segues nicely into what you've created with the Adventures in Drawing guided sketchbook, because I think the tendency probably is to kind of maybe through the early pages of it. And it's a load of fun. I think a lot of people would probably be like, all right, I'm going to imitate Scott just by, you know, you have the visual sort of guides there. And I think by the time you do every single page, by the time you reach the end, you're probably going to start finding a sort of artistic voice inside you. You didn't know it was there, but you kind of had to go through the whole process.
Right. Yeah, totally. That's the whole point of it. Like trying to like push yourself to, I mean, there's all kinds of concepts in there really that like, that I like try to adhere to when I'm trying to create, which I think all, you know, most writers kind of do that whole free writing thing and try to, how to loosen your mind and come up with ideas and, just like getting as many ideas as you can out, even the crappy ones, just to like kind of, loosen your mind up. That's the whole point of the book, is just try how to kind of like ease your mind. And sometimes a blank piece of paper is like the most intimidating thing, but like when someone just makes one suggestion, then at least something's in your mind. There's something there, and that could inspire something else. Like a tree, someone says tree, then that inspires a whole wealth of possibilities.
Yeah, something you just said was so important, and it's something I've heard Seth Godin opine about while citing Isaac Asimov, who is someone who was a prolific sci-fi writer, and he just sat himself down at the typewriter from like 7 in the morning till noon, and he just typed and didn't stop. And that was an exercise in being comfortable enough with generating enough bad work to get to the good work. So,
right.
So many people put that hurdle in front of them thinking they have to generate good work all the time, but it's, and you just said it, was you have to learn how to be, as soon as you learn how to be comfortable with bad stuff, then you can actually break through, but you do have to generate bad stuff first.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I learned that lesson in college. You learn that lesson a little bit, but it wasn't until I worked in games, because I don't know if I should mention what I've done, I guess, but.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, because I'd originally, I'm jumping around just like you're saying, right?
That's yeah, okay. No, yeah, totally, totally.
Because when I went to college, I wanted to do comic books. I really wanted to draw like X-Men comics and things like that. Like that's what I went to school to do. And it's hard. It was hard, and it was like the mid-90s they didn't have much of that stuff in school. So it was like storyboarding for movies or something like that, and maybe some comic classes. So that was kind of like, that style was what I wanted to work in. So, and maybe picture books too, but mostly I wanted to do comics. And then, but then after school, like, or even through school, like with, through friends introducing me to like other types of comics, like, Chris Ware and Acme and Yikes and all these other, and 8-Ball and other ways of kind of doing comics, it kind of made me think differently about it and like able to riff a little bit differently on, what characters could be doing, what they could be saying, what they could be looking like. It just kind of helped loosen it up. But then working in games, I worked in, after college, I worked at Lucas Learning doing like Star Wars games. And I was never really a huge gamer. I mean, I don't think gamer was even a term back then, but like, the games, drawing for games. And then like after Lucas going and with Tim Schafer to start Double Fine as art director and concept artist, like drawing characters, like the whole like idea of like generating ideas for characters is such a grueling process, because you're like, you have to like, you can't be married to your designs, but you have to keep on generating so many designs and then putting them in front of Tim or whoever it is and saying, hey, this is this, and you pitch it, but then you can't be so married to it because you're constantly getting denied with these things, and you need to fully, fully explore all the possibilities of a character, all the possibilities of whatever it is you're working on before you actually come to the sweet spot of when the ideas are really good and what's most appropriate for whatever the project is.
It strikes me that experience that you had in fifth grade of putting out 10 mock-ups for a logo and not winning almost was like set you up for what you were doing there with this gaming company, in the sense that you had to generate a lot and get used to saying 9 out of 10 are like, and then yes. So that strikes me as something that was pretty formative. Like if you just retroactively look back at that experience.
Probably true. That's probably true. Yeah. I mean, I always thought that in school too, like definitely like when you have to put the first 10, 15 ideas down before you're like, oh, okay, now I'm getting the good ideas. Or even if the first idea was the best idea, going down the path of creating the 15, you're like, okay, you know what? That first idea was pretty wonderful. And you go back to it that way. But I mean, you have to fully understand what you're trying to come up with and what your, the subject matter is. You have to like really spend the time thinking about it like that.
And when you were coming up as a very young artist, did you have any limiting beliefs that you had to overcome?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I went into school, I only had a certain type of, I was into that certain type of art. I was into realism and I was into like fantasy art. I was into all those things when I really didn't like abstract art, didn't like modern art of any kind or contemporary art, like in that way. And that was something that I had to learn. It held me back from growing as an artist and seeing things differently and like being exposed to that. Like I love so many of those types of things. I love, that sounds weird, but I mean, I just like, that has influenced, how I see things, I guess. And it's opened up, quite a bit more for me, to that type of way of interpreting stuff. But, I feel like that was the main thing for me that was holding me back, like being very pigeonholing myself with what I enjoyed to look at.
And what did maybe opening your mind to some of the things that maybe didn't necessarily suit your taste 100%, but what did some of maybe that other stuff teach you and inform the work that you ended up doing and loved doing?
I mean, the newer styles? The newer...
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I guess like breaking it down and not having it just be like, because in school I was like, oh, I want to perfect like the human body. Like I just want to be a great draftsperson. You know, I want to like just be the best at drawing these things. And after a while, it became something like, okay, I felt pretty good at it, but also it was like, what am I getting out of this? And what am I saying with this? I mean, I guess that was also the thing that was a turning point for me, because I was pretty lost after college of trying to figure out just like why I was creating, like, because I kind of like lost my enjoyment of it. Like I was like, I just don't know why I'm painting these things. I don't know why. Am I putting them on the wall so people will look at it and give me a thumbs up and say, "Ooh, you're good at drawing," or am I like, because I didn't have any messages to say to people. Like I didn't have a rough life. I was just like, I'm not like needing to paint or draw to stay sane or anything like that. So I felt like I didn't have a reason to be doing it. And I struggled with that quite a bit. So I saw a therapist about it even. And like, I started working with kids, painting and stuff with them and drawing with them, like in shelters and things. And that kind of, the more time I spent with them, the more I was like, okay, this is obviously the excitement that I've always wanted to retain from when you're a kid and you're just like so excited to draw and color and create scenes and characters and things. Like that was kind of what I wanted to get back to. So being exposed to all these different types of ways of thinking about things, from kids to like, adults and museums and galleries that I was enjoying going to, like, that just helped me kind of break things down a little bit differently.
And what about your work graduated to another level after that, after working with the kids and having that kind of a breakthrough?
Well, I think, it just loosened me up a bit. I mean, cause that was the main thing about it, was like, I enjoyed the process more. And I enjoyed seeing people enjoy the work. I like making people laugh and I like making people enjoy themselves. I mean, that's like kind of just like what I've decided that's my favorite thing to do. I'm not going to make them think. I mean, maybe in the future I could maybe try to figure out how to like make people think about the deeper parts of life. But I guess I am making people think about that. I forgot the question. I'm rambling. What did you say?
Oh, just how did your work change after you had that breakthrough of, you know, working with them? You know, you're at that point where you were lost after college, and then working with the kids in the shelters, you know, it kind of, you know, another switch turned on for you.
Well, I think that's what it was. It just like, I enjoyed the process a lot more, and I enjoyed kind of painting in that way and thinking about it and not worrying about it and just not being afraid of the blank page and not being afraid of like the reason why I was creating it. And I was just enjoying making these things. And I think it just, my work kind of started coming alive a bit more. And around that time, I also started painting in watercolors, and the mediums themselves were something that I struggled with as well, because I was trying to paint with gouache and acrylic, and I just was struggling with everything. It was like, I just didn't enjoy it. So it was just kind of things came together at the right time. Like discovering watercolors was kind of like a nice way to, it helped me relax a little bit because it was a very airy, pleasant, almost non-committal medium to me that I was like, oh, this is really easing my mind and my soul.
Yeah.
It helped me create more.
And as you're, you know, looking to then take your art and turn it into a vocation, and how did you maintain the joy and the excitement, or how do you maintain the joy and excitement so you don't get burned out? And when you go to the drafting table and you're like, here we go again, you know, how do you manifest that so you don't get burned out with the work that you've, you know, grew up loving?
God, it's hard, man, because you do get burnt out. I do get burnt out on it, to be honest with you. But like, I think in the years of growing as an artist, like when I was working at the game company, I had a number of different outlets, I guess, for it. Like not having all of it in the game company. When I was working on the games, I was also working on comics. I was doing comics with my friends. We get together every Sunday and we would just do jam comics together, and we would make these comics for comic shows and stuff. And then I also had a band, and I had like another art collective that we would throw shows together, and everyone did different things like photography and like painting and whatever it is. And so there's some chefs, and like we would throw these shows, these experiences. So it was kind of like having my hand in different things and always with a group of other people, because I had a hard time motivating myself. So I think having my hand in all those different things kind of helped fuel each other, because I could take a break from any of those things, you know? And that kind of helped me kind of relax with everything. And I kind of probably overworked myself a bit too much. So in my San Francisco days, I probably worked a little bit too much, but it didn't matter because I was young and excited. I had the energy to do it. Now, like finding the life balance was something that kind of also shifted my life a bit. So I wasn't working constantly, because I think another part of it too is getting out and enjoying the day, enjoying friends, enjoying experiences, and taking in the culture of the world, and not working constantly. I think there needs to be a happy medium between that, or else you'll get burnt out.
That you've said a lot of really great things there worth unpacking. Like there's that a community element too that's, I think, so vital, whether it doesn't matter what discipline, artistic discipline, it's like having these groups and being a little, getting outside of your own head and being a part of something that's a little bit bigger. What, like, just even if it's as simple as a bunch of pals getting around doing these jam comics, which just sounds awesome. How important was that for you to have these more social gatherings, and how did that inform you and sort of feed you?
Well, it was always good to have friends to get you to do things. I mean, because you hold each other accountable for it. And then having goals, like it's one thing to have a group of friends to get together and show projects to each other. And it's another thing to be like, okay, well, let's have a show. Let's rent out this space and we will have a show and there. And that's the goal. So we will create work for that show. Or here's a comic convention coming up. We have to create comics that we bring to the show. Like we had goals, like that was a secret to like actually being productive. But actually having friends to be accountable, help you be accountable, like really helped as well. So, and with the comic guys getting together and doing the jam comics, that was like the early days of me really getting stressed out about the blank page. Cause, I'm sure you know about the people know about the jam comic thing, but it's the sort of thing where like you each have a piece of paper and like one person draws a panel to start like a comic, and then you pass it to the next person, and then they continue that comic, and you have to kind of, I mean, oftentimes they turn raunchy, which I tried to avoid as much as I could, but they try to like, you try to be funny and out funny each other or whatever. But whenever it came to me, I would really get stressed out about it. Mm-hmm. And I'd really be struggling with it. I'm like, oh my God, like what do I do next? But it was a really good exercise to kind of loosen up that part of the mind. So,
yeah. With your approach to the work, what would you say are your key strengths, and what do you struggle with as well?
With when it comes to brainstorming and coming up with ideas and things,
I guess your ideas, or even just your as you approach you know, a project or an assignment, you know, what are some things that you feel you're particularly good at, and maybe some things that are lagging, but you know, you got to level those up to what you're really strong with.
Right. Well, I guess whatever the project is that I'm working on or I like to, I just need to take the pressure off my mind in any way possible. I mean, that's like, cause I approach it a little bit like, I talk a lot about improv cause I do improv every once in a while. Which is, I'm sure people know about what it is, but it's like where a group of people get up in front of an audience and, or just in front of each other, and you ask for a word from the audience, and then you just start instantly making, scenes from those words. So it's a way to kind of stay creative, and you never think about it that much. You just go in and keep continuing as a way to kind of get out of your head. That's because that's the whole point of it. And I like to take that same approach to drawing and coming up with ideas and things. So if there's a project, I will first thing I'll probably do is gather so much reference. I'm very good at gathering reference. It's kind of my procrastinator. I just spend a long time gathering reference because I never know what are those things. You just never know what might inspire an idea, and then lay all that reference out and just start riffing and just drawing and making lists and not having it be and having it be very stream of consciousness and not being afraid to just make a list about what you're going to do during the day, or make a list about your favorite movies, your favorite foods, whatever it is. It doesn't matter because you're just exercising your mind a little bit. And that was kind of I feel like that's the best way for me to generate lots and lots of ideas. And I feel like that is a strength that I have as far as coming up with lots of ideas. I kind of do that to perhaps a fault because I spend a lot of time doing that side of it. And then focusing on certain ideas that kind of are that make me laugh or make me happy or that might work for whatever the project is. That's I'm not the best decision maker, so sometimes I need help with that part of it. But besides that, once I get started, then it's a pretty enjoyable process. But definitely the brainstorming thing part is just my favorite part. And then actually painting it, there's always the point where I assemble everything in the computer and then print it out to paint it. And I'm always when I'm painting something, there's always a middle zone. When I get started, I'm cool. Oh man, I have to make decisions on color. Oh, it kind of stresses me out. And there's always a middle zone where I'm basically trying to salvage the painting. I feel like I'm trying to, I'm like, this is going to turn out horrible. And I'm just trying to salvage it. And then by the end of it, I'm like, okay, that works. That feels good. And I have to call it quits. And I always call my paintings quits before they probably should be quit, just because I could genuinely work on every painting for 5, 6, 7 months and never be done with it because I'm just keep seeing stuff. So I have to cut myself off or else at some point, or else I'll never get on to another painting sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a common thread among a lot of people, writers too. If they don't have a deadline, they'll just keep tinkering and tinkering and tinkering, taking out a sentence and then putting another one back in. And it's eventually you just need to say, nope, you've put in the time, it's good, ship it and move on to the next project.
I know. And sometimes it's definitely disconcerting, working in the games, you're constantly seeing things that you could make better or gameplay that is better. And you're constantly wanting to keep doing it, but you just don't have the time. You don't have the budget and you just have to put out, just do as well, as good a job as you can and whatever it is. And hopefully it'll be, people won't notice the things that you notice.
Yeah.
Which is almost always the case.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to get to a point where it doesn't have to be good. It just has to be good enough and then keep moving.
Right. Right. And it's not a depressing thought. It's just something you're hey, this is the best I can do right now. I'm going to move on and make some other wonderful thing. And so you just kind of keep moving.
Have you seen the movie Don't Think Twice?
Oh, man, I don't think so.
That movie's, it's an improv movie and it's written by Mike Birbiglia. And it stars Gillian Jacobs and, Keenan Michael Key. Michael, I can't
Yeah.
The guy from Key and Peele. The Key from Key and Peele.
Yeah. I need to watch it, actually. I haven't watched it yet.
Ah, man. I think you'd love it, given that you dabble in improv. And there are just so many great things that are and themes within that movie that I apply to anyone in the arts. And namely, like, one of them gets very successful in the troupe, like, gets picked out to be, like, the Saturday Night Live one. And he's not necessarily better than everyone else, but for some reason, like, he was chosen. And so then it's like, how does the group dynamic, where improv is all about the group and surrendering to that, whatever it is, it's all for the yes and, it's all for the group. And then the one gets plucked. And so all of a sudden, it's the one with his, you know, they all have the same ambitions, but that guy made it. And so it's like, how do these people wrestle with their jealousies and everything? And so I think there's a lot of really good things that you'd probably just recognize, as any artist, I think, does in that movie.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Because, like, your peers and everyone are constantly, like, having successes and failures all around you. And it's hard to not compare yourself to other people, but obviously. But
that's something I love talking to people about, everyone, because I'm especially guilty of it. And it's anytime I find myself doing it, I just feel lousy. But how do you deal with comparing yourself to others and maybe jealousies that you have felt for other people in the field? And, like, how do you sort of redirect that energy when you feel that creeping on?
Well, I mean, I feel like I don't, like, I mean, yeah, I mean, of course that affects me, but, like, I try to just, like, I just kind of let it happen a little bit and then just kind of let it wash over myself. But for the most part, just remind myself that everyone is, like, everyone has their own path and their own strengths and weaknesses. And it's just, like, it's, I find it kind of inspiring to see people have successes and have wonderful things happen. And just, like, it just makes me want to keep doing better stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause there's the tendency sometimes and to, especially if there's someone you feel like you're every bit as talented, you work every bit as hard. And then one person seems to be just, like, a meteoric rise, and then you just start looking at yourself like, what did I do wrong if I'm still sort of stuck in the mud here? And it can be challenging to deal with that.
I feel like that's just like looking at the universe, and it's just like, it's too much to handle. It's too overwhelming for a human being to think about that too much. There's enough stuff to worry about in your day-to-day life that, like, to think about the hypotheticals of, like, oh my god, this person's, like, oh, they're so successful, what's this thing, why haven't I did it? Like, that's just like thinking about, oh man, where's the universe end? What is the, it's just like, there's no point to be thinking that stuff. It just kind of just messes with your mind. And you leave the earth for a while and you think about that stuff. And then you come back and you're like, oh, okay, just get back to what I'm doing. It's just like, there's not really a point to do that.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Total agreement. How do you set up your days so you can approach the work with, like, good energy and try to check in with yourself to kind of reach that coveted flow state where you're just really clicking on all cylinders?
Well, I do kind of, like, have a little bit of a routine that I do kind of rely on as a way to, like, I'm a creature of habits in that way. But there's through the years, there's things I've discovered about myself with my own productivity. Just give myself a break on certain things and let myself go. When, like, for example, like, I like mornings, since I wake up early, and I immediately have to get out of the house. Like, I can't work in my house in the mornings. Like, I have to, and I like being around other people. So I immediately have to get out and go to a coffee shop and hang out, read whatever I'm reading, and just relax myself as much as I can. And then I can get into whatever the work is that I need to do. And I also know that, there's the golden hours of working. I feel like you don't need to work nonstop from morning till night. Even if you have a deadline, it just seems like you don't have to have a huge chunk of time to do that stuff. If you're trying to riff on something, like, I can usually get my work done from like 9 to 11. And then I know that I have a weak spot in the middle of the day where I can't get anything done. I can't focus at all until like 3 or 4, and then like 3 or 4 till 7. That's my other golden hour. And those are my two times that I can get work done. And it's okay to not get a lot of work done in the middle of the day. If you know you can cram some good chunks of work in those two little zones and you can get the same amount of work done, then it's fine. Like if you know that you get a lot of work done in a few hours a day and you could really hammer it out, then that's fine. You know, give yourself, you don't have to push yourself constantly. I don't know. I feel like those sorts of breaks are kind of nice. And I can get like do my businessy things in the middle of the day, my brainless stuff that I don't, need to worry about too much.
So when you go to the coffee shop in the morning, what are you typically reading?
I don't know. Whatever book I'm reading. I'm reading some sci-fi book right now.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite author or genre that you like to read?
Not really. After I finish a book that I really love, I want to keep reading that genre, and then I start down the road of a similar book. I'm like, this isn't the same, and then I shift. Like I really like I like fantasy stuff. I like sci-fi stuff. I like kind of Stephen King sorts of books where it's like real world stuff with just a touch of supernatural weird stuff happening. I like those sorts of books too. What am I reading right now? This is a super sci-fi one. The Fifth Season is what I'm reading right now.
Okay.
By N.K. Jemisin. It's really good. I think I read Stephen King before this, to be honest, but anyways, yeah.
So then you get back to your studio. Is your studio at home or do you have a workplace offsite?
I've recently moved to LA and I haven't gotten a studio here yet. But I do like to work out and around in WeWork sorts of spaces and stuff to be around people. But I have a studio in Brooklyn with a bunch of artists that I like to be around and work. But usually when I'm trying to come up with ideas, I like to be out in coffee shops to come up with ideas. And then I go into the studio to just make stuff paint and do that sort of thing. That's usually how I break it up.
And so you've got that window, say 9 to 11, and then you have another golden set of hours from 3 to 7. So in between, what are you typically doing in those moments to either detach yourself from what you've been doing and also in a way to prepare for the next wave?
That's when I do my emails and get on the computer and kind of take care of businessy things. I mean, there's enough businessy things to keep me occupied a little bit. And then also just gathering reference and things and going for strolls and hopefully getting out and experiencing the world a little bit more, going to museum or, going to the park. And doing more of the kind of normal life things all the day.
And what do those businessy things look like for you personally? So for people to get a sense of, what that is, the nature of your hustle, invoicing, whatever it may be, what does that look like for you?
God, there's so many. I mean, I have my online shop that I have to I have someone that runs it and everything. So, we have regular print drops that we do and products that we have to create. And then just answering emails from people and, it varies. I feel like I want to open my email just to kind of remind me what I do, what I have to do. But I'm not constantly doing invoices. I'm not constantly doing that stuff. But just I guess businessy is all the things on email and stuff that take me away from drawing, I suppose. Some of it I probably isn't really business, I'll say.
Right. And what fraction of your time and sort of mental headspace is dedicated to that versus actual creation?
Probably more than I wish it was during the day. You mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably more than, it occupies my mind a little bit too much, but you're also catching me at a moment where I'm in the throes of all these deadlines and I'm trying to juggle three or four different projects at once. And I'm exceptionally scatterbrained and I try my best to fill in every moment, which is, I'm not really living by my rules right now.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's funny. A couple months ago, is when, I was just scrolling through my Google feed and on my phone. And that's when I came across, this is how I got familiar with you and your work. It was the Great Showdowns with, the Infinity War thing. For some reason that popped up. And I was like, oh, that's super cool. And so I just started clicking on that. And then, of course, went down the rabbit hole of finding out more about you and your work. And something that that struck me, that was interesting, as aside from it just being all the showdown stuff you do, just being super fun and just really fun to look at, I was curious about how an artist can get permission to use, like, you know, popular culture images for their own interpretation. Like, is there a process where you have to, like, talk to Marvel or Disney about this, or how does that work? Just for my own curiosity.
I mean, you probably should, if you're making like tons and tons of money off of something and becomes like a huge thing. I mean, obviously, yeah, you probably should. But I mean, with a lot of these projects, I just like, with the showdowns, it's just, I mean, in some ways it's like, it's an interpretive kind of fan thing. You're just kind of, you're creating something based on that is like, something that's just as inspiring. So it's just like, it's a sea of, like, the showdowns are just like a sea of the films that inspire me, just boiled down to like little moments, of tension and things. And that's like just kind of a fun little thing that I do, but I certainly don't go and seek out all the studios to get permission to post those or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
That just would be a little bit too much work, which I mean, I don't know. I've never had a problem with it. I've only just kind of, you know, talked to directors and movie makers and things about it. And it's just kind of a fun exchange of stuff, I guess, you know, like giving them prints of the movies that they've made and like enjoying the movies that they make. And like, it's just kind of an exchange of creating things for each other is how I see it. You know,
how did you come up with the Great Showdowns idea?
That was like from, I used to show, well, I still show at this gallery called Gallery 1988 in LA. I forget how long they've been around, since 2005 or something. But they were one of the first galleries to have like kind of pop culture inspired shows. And there's one of their early group shows is called Crazy for Cult, which is like, paintings based, you know, inspired by cult movies. And that was, the first time I was in that show is when I created those little, like 10 little showdowns for movies, just to kind of like have them be like little candy, little bite sized pieces. Cause a lot of the pieces were that everyone was creating was really big and overwhelming. And I was just like, I just want like little taste tests for people, like affordable little art that people could buy. And it was like kind of just like fun little boiling down those moments and kind of like, I think it was like, Fistful of Dollars and Ghostbusters and against Slimer and I think it was Predator when he takes off his mask, like various moments that between characters, like real moments that we remember between things. And it was just a fun time I had making that. And then every time they had a Crazy for Cult show each year, I would make more of them. And then eventually I just got really so into them, I started the website and as a way for me to like create them on a regular basis.
Do you have a notebook set aside that's like your Great Showdowns ideas?
Yeah, well, I have a Word doc that I've had since 2008 that I just keep adding to and then crossing off and stuff. But because anytime anyone is like, oh, have you done this or this? And I'll just add it to the list. So I'm slowly making my way through it. And there's a lot of movies that are comfortably in the middle of the queue that I don't know if I'll ever get to them, but so there's a lot of movies that exist.
Yeah. Yeah. And there, you can take it in so many different directions and it's really just, it's wild and fun. And I wonder if when you were watching Infinity War, like as you're like, oh man, this is going to be, I might be in trouble with this one. This one's big.
Yeah. That was definitely a big one for sure. I mean, there was a time too when I was really, because I took a break from the showdowns for about a year, like last year, and because it did kind of get overwhelming and just kind of every time I'd see a movie, I would think, ooh, what would the showdown be from this, and just kind of it messed with my viewing experiences sometimes. But now I just don't care about it as much. Just will when I sit down later after seeing a movie, then I'll try to sift through and figure out what would be a good moment.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, if you're, you know, so in that, then you're watching the movie just thinking like, all right, well, what's going to be the great showdown for this? And then it totally just takes you out of the moment.
It does. I feel that way, too, when I'm on vacation and, like, taking pictures. I'm either, like, I don't take pictures that much on vacation, or I'm taking it a lot in a moment. Like, I like to experience the vacation, so I feel like it takes me out. Like, okay, now I'm going to frame it and take a picture of it. Like, all of a sudden I'm a picture. I'm having pictures on vacation instead of having a vacation.
Yeah.
It just
messes
with it. I don't know.
It's true. It's like, and also the sort of infective way that social media has just kind of viralized into our lives, and like it can be a bit unsettling that it's just every moment, you know, there is a little twitch in your brain that's like, when you take a picture of something, it's like, oh, like, is this a postable thing? And it's like, no, it's like, stop that. This is like a new phenomenon for the last 10 years. Like, just stop it and enjoy the landscape instead of thinking about how you're going to post it on your Instagram feed.
Yeah. I mean, if you could really, there are people, I mean, I don't know. I think most people, well, I mean, I don't know how they feel about like taking pictures like that and what their reasons are for it. But I remember like before Instagram, like my buddy that we always be hanging out, and he'd constantly be wanting to, oh, yeah, let's take a photo right now. I'll take a photo. I'm like, man, that's so crazy that like it's like super enjoyable for him to record those moments. And like, it's part of experiencing the world for him. It's like, oh, I'm just taking a picture of it. But, which I think like now maybe people think of it that way too, I suppose. But
how do you like to manage your social media so you don't get overwhelmed by the whole machine of that?
And I don't know. I don't know. I'm really into like, I mean, I think right now I've just gotten really into the Instagram stories. It's like, because I can just power through it really quick.
Mm-hmm.
And like just eating a quick meal sort of thing. And I guess like, I don't know. It's not a huge part of my life. I'm not really on Facebook much anymore. It's not like, I'm not looking at it all the time. It's not a huge obsession of mine necessarily. So I feel like I don't need to regulate it a heck of a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. What's fun about your Instagram feed, I love the process ones, the showing your work elements of like showing you sketching, you know, pencil sketch of something. And then as you're painting in with the watercolors and stuff like those, that's pretty fun. Like, I love seeing process stuff. Is that kind of your favorite thing to use it for?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I think so. Cause I love watching people paint. It's like so therapeutic to watch. I love that, to be honest. So yeah, I like to post that as much as I can. But then again, that is something that like I think about when I'm painting. I'm like, oh, here I'm cruising, painting, and then I'm like, oh, I should probably, oh man, maybe I should record a video, and that just takes me out of the whole painting experience too. So even that, it's like I'm either painting or I'm like thinking about how I should do a photograph, and it takes me out. And I'm an observer of myself.
At what point did you want to then design and work your way through Adventures in Drawing? You know, what was the inspiration for you to create this wonderful little notebook?
Well, I've always I really do enjoy the process of coming up with ideas and brainstorming. And I think Insight Editions that put out my art book, which came before The Splendid Life, is like a collection of all my art from the past 6-7 years. And they wanted to also put a coloring book out like as a companion thing. So I was kind of thinking like, well, let's make it like more like a workbook. Like you would have the art book and you'd have this book as almost like a way to kind of like come up with ideas. And when you're looking through the art and everything, and then this is kind of like your own little notebook that you can kind of bring around and brainstorm yourself. Cause I mean, I am fascinated by people's like process and how they come up with ideas. And I just wanted to like create a book that like people can kind of riff and come up with ideas on their own. But it's like I'm making suggestions for them and kind of taking them through my process a little bit so we can kind of create together. So I really want it to be a book where like it's like I'm hanging out. We're hanging out together, drawing together. Like I really wanted it to feel like that. That's why I wrote little all through it. I'm just like writing little things about what we're drawing together, and almost like we're just kind of hanging out in a coffee shop together. You know?
Yeah.
I want it to be, because that's one thing I really love. Like I love interacting with people. I love hanging out. That's with the live stuff on live streaming and things like that, and going to shows, gallery shows, and going to comic conventions and things. I just love meeting other artists and meeting people that like I enjoy their work, they enjoy my work, or just like people that just I don't know. It's fun to hang out with people like in that capacity. So I kind of wanted to be that virtual thing.
Yeah, I always love talking to people about how they deal with loneliness and even self-doubt. And it sounds like how you deal with problem, maybe both of those, is by ensuring that you're surrounded by people who maybe of different artistic tastes, but just by being in and among a group of people who just dig art is a way to kind of quell those inner demons, as well as, you know, keep you from going crazy, and because this can be lonely work.
Definitely. That's probably why Twitter and Instagram and stuff is so popular with artists, because, I mean, it is such a lonely profession. And to kind of feel like you're working late, you're stressed on something, and then you look on there like, oh, these other people are working late too. It's like the world is our workshop together. The world is our studio.
And you say, oh, I'm sorry, go on.
No, just like working in a studio, it's the same thing. I was just going to say, that's why I like being around other artists, even just in their presence.
Yeah. And you said you were, you know, fascinated. Part of the reason why you like to show the videos of you painting or sketching is because, you know, you're fascinated by other artists' process as well. So who are some of the other artists, maybe peers that you admire, or any, maybe even, you know, just inspirations from, you know, decades ago, you know, maybe their process, like who are some of those artists that inform what you do and, you know, and fascinate you?
God, I mean, that's like such a huge, I mean, I guess it's certainly ever changing. I think I think some of my big influences when I was first starting with my style, with this painting and stuff, was like really into Shag and like Joe Soren and J.R. Siebold and those guys, and then slowly kind of building from the, and then earlier than that, Richard Scarry books, with just a lot happening in those books, and Ed Emberley and you know, Maurice Sendak and those sorts of illustrators and creators. But then, like, I mean, even now, like on Instagram, see, I'm pulling my Instagram now so I can remember who all I'm looking at all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love Aaron Horky puts out a lot of, our styles are wildly different, but like he does those really detailed pen drawings for Mondo that I just, and he's constantly putting process stuff up there, and it's so fun to watch him do his like pen work. It's crazy. CL Kim stuff. I like Ghost Shrimp. I like Fandria. I like all, I don't know. It's a sea of people that run together in a wonderful.
Is there a particular tactic or anything in the last, let's just say, 5 years that you've picked up from somebody else to be like, oh, that's a really cool habit or, you know, tactic that I'm going to cherry pick and steal to apply to my own work?
Well, I'm sure that in the early days, like my buddy John Klassen, he's a pretty popular, like pretty successful picture book artist. And I know in the beginning days when we were drawing, like a lot of I would be very much influenced without how he would break down shapes. And I would find myself wanting to simplify like that as much as I could. I mean, he relies a lot more on, well, not relies, but he's really wonderful at creating shapes to define things. And I really rely on lines. Like really lively line work, you know. I feel like that kind of saves my stuff lots of times. But I would oftentimes think about how he would break shapes down with values and lights and darks and things, and that could kind of help me think about things. Sometimes I'd say, "What would John do?" I ask myself that.
And how have you over the years kind of cultivated a sense of patience with your work to run your own race and to let your career just kind of unfold at your own tempo?
How do you deal with your own tempo, your own, like,
I guess this kind of harkens back to the comparison question in a sense. It's kind of a partner to that, because, you know, just you know, you might be seeing some people that might be 5 or 10 years ahead of you, and you're like, you want to get there so fast, but you have to have like a security in your own path, and just be patient that if you put in the work, you know, you'll get there. It might not be tomorrow, but it's coming. You just got to keep doing the work.
Yeah. Well, I think that came from many, many years ago, because there's so many people that like are much younger than me that I'm like, oh my God, they're doing the stuff that I want to be doing too, you know? But I think it's just like so many, there's just so many things that I just want to do. And I just know that like, I don't know. I just know that I'll get to them someday, or maybe I won't. But as long as I'm still just making those things, it doesn't bother me as much as maybe it should, I guess. I don't know exactly the best way to deal with it, except for just keep yourself productive and, not dwell, like, you know, see other people. I guess like if I was ever kind of really getting down the dumps about it, or kind of getting in my own freaked out zone, I'll just call somebody up or go hang out with some people and just forget about it. Wash it away with hangouts.
I like that. What are some of the things that you, some other goals that you have creatively that you want to get to?
Well, I have these pitches. I'm working on for more books, picture books and stuff, but I would like to do some, I'd like to do cartoon. I would like to get into movement of my stuff. I've been trying to figure out how to get together some pitches for that. And, but also like, I like performing. I like being in front of people. I like, doing that sort of thing too. So I don't know. I'm my own person in front of people. I don't know what that entails.
Yeah. But,
and movies and, you know, things like that. I just like, I don't know all that stuff, but I also would love to create like a environment for people to come, like their kid, for kids, like almost like a Disneyland environment. That'd be another dream.
That's cool. So, yeah. Like a Lego, like the Lego park and all that kind of interactive stuff.
Yeah. A place that kids can enter and experience, or people can enter and experience, or even a show. But also I want to do a show like a not a Mr. Rogers show or a Bob Ross show, but a show that I can create and hang out with people and connect with people in that way as well. Like maybe live in person, and also something, you know, a show online or some sort of TV thing. I don't know.
I feel like that would be like, especially since you're in LA now, like to just do maybe like a little 10 or 15 person audience, but you just like can stream it live on YouTube and then have it archived there too, so it serves the live audience as well as an archived audience who wants to go check out the backlog. That seems totally possible.
Yeah, it seems like so many of those shows now that you see like live comedy shows, you're like, okay, recording this as a podcast, that seems like a popular thing. Live show.
Yeah.
But I'd be down with that. I just like working with people and having good times. I want to stay fresh and happy.
Yeah. So what, how do you keep things, you know, fresh and happy, and what still excites you and keeps bringing you back to the drafting table?
Oh boy. new projects, a possibility. I don't know. Just brainstorming new projects, whether it be like a gallery show or like a book or, I don't know. I feel like as an artist, it's good to keep on wanting to change and grow with what you do and stuff. Like I would like to tell some like longer form stories somehow. I mean, heck, I haven't even told that many short form stories. Yeah. But someone tells more stories. Burp. I don't know. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. Cause I partly asked that because once you've been in it for 15 or 20 years, it can be a grind. And I'm sure you've experienced that, and everyone does at some point. But at some point, you reach a level where, oh, that's why I did this. It was that moment when I was in fifth grade drawing dragons. Like that was that moment of joy, and I have to. And I just, if I can get back to that ethos, it'll make everything kind of just iron over, like de-wrinkle everything that you're, you know, the business stuff, you know, it's like, if I can get back to that moment of joy. And so that's why sometimes I ask like, what still excites you? Because it's like, oh yeah, if I can find that moment, that's what keeps bringing the best work out of myself.
Right. Well, I think that's definitely what it is. Like just like, being like whatever job you're working on, because I've been working on Psychonauts, a sequel to an early game that came out in 2005 from Double Fine, and it's something that like is super fun. But in order to keep fresh and enjoy that, like there's I'm constantly having wandering eyes of like, oh my God, there's this other thing I want to do or this other thing I want to do, and just finding time to work on all these various things, I feel like can keep you young, but also can drive you bonkers.
Right.
So I don't know. There's such a thing as doing too many things at once. guess that's the thing that I have.
Yeah, I have a hard time focusing myself. Is that something you kind of struggle with too? Is like just picking a direction and going with it?
Definitely. I mean, man, this past, like, I mean, the last book, the last picture book I came out with was Hug Machine. That was 2014. And I am a little frustrated that I haven't put out another book since then on my own. And like, when I was sending pitches to my agent, I would like come up with these little log lines, little concepts, like the brainstorming thing is always my favorite part. And I had like a list of like 150 of these concepts. And I would send them to like my agent and I'd be like, help me pick five of these. And like, I could definitely go through and par those down. You could par those down. Not all of them are that great. But I just have a hard time. Like, I need someone to help me figure out like, hey, focus on these ones. You know, I'm like, I just need, that's where I need the help the most, perhaps, you know, like knowing which to pay attention to, you know?
Yeah. And with adventures in drawing, like what are you hoping that even someone who's wouldn't consider themselves an aspiring artist, just someone who's like just looking to noodle around and have some fun, like what are you hoping that they take away from this fun book?
Well, I guess like that they can come up with ideas of their own that are pretty wonderful, and like just how to like kind of just relax your mind, you know, and like just, I don't know, just feel good about the wild ideas that they can come up with.
Yeah. And is there a particular, I love on very early, there's like the different types of like tools to use, whether brush pens or pencils or crayons. Is there, you know, a particular device that lends itself better to a certain kind of sketching, or is it just a matter of taste?
I think it probably is a matter of taste. I remember back in the day when I was first designing with Double Fine, I would constantly change my mediums because if I'm hitting a wall for my design, I'm like, oh, it's because I'm using colored pencils. I need to use markers. And I'll start using markers. And, you know, and then I'll be like, ooh, and I'll hit a good run of good designs. And then I'll start hitting a wall again. I'm like, I need to switch up. I need to start drawing on paper bag. You know, like I was constantly changing my mediums because it was just – whatever you're the most comfortable doing, you know, because sometimes even using the same thing over and over again, you get burnt out on that and you're, you know, so that's why for me right now, I really like painting with soft graphite pencils and colored pencils, or that's not painting, that's drawing. But that's how I like generating ideas. That's my favorite thing. But in the past it was like brush pens or like ballpoint pens sometimes are fun to draw with, but really, whatever relaxes you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, Scott, where can people find you online and get more familiar with your work if they're not already familiar with you?
Scott C. That's just the letter C. ScottC.com is probably the best way. And you can go see GrudgeShowdowns.com and things like that. But Scott C. is probably the quickest way to get to everything.
Fantastic.
And then like on Twitter and Instagram, Scott Lava is my handle.
Very nice. Where did that come from, the lava part?
Oh, well, that's in the beginning days of Twitter when you have to come up with a handle, and it was like, hey, hot lava, Scott Lava.
Oh.
But and that joke is going to have to stick with me for all the rest of my days, basically.
Fantastic. Well, Scott, thank you so much for carving out an hour of your day to just talk shop about how you go about your own work and your career. This is a lot of fun for me to get to kind of know you a little bit more and get familiar with your work and talk to you about the process. So thank you so much for the time, and I wish you the continued success, and I can't wait to have another conversation like this again at some point in the future.
Thank you, man. Thank you so much. It was super great talking to you.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, and we'll keep in touch for sure.
Let's do it.
All right. Take care, man.
You too.
I'm going to give myself a high five for that show. Episode 116 in the books. Go find Scott at scottc.com and follow him everywhere. Buy his book, buy his merch, buy a great Showdown print. I desperately want the Infinity War print and the Spider-Man Homecoming print and the Wonder Woman print. I was thinking of suggesting a Titanic and Iceberg Great Showdown, but that seemed in poor taste. Thanks for listening, CNFers. Much love from your humble host. If you can't do interview, see ya! Today's episode is brought to you by my amazing monthly newsletter. That's right. Sign up for my reading recommendations list by visiting BrendanOMara.com.
and entering your email either in the smart bar at the top of the page or in the pop-up that'll come up in the middle, about 10 seconds into your sesh. On the first of the month, you'll receive a cool photograph I took, 4 book recommendations, a cool quote or two, and links to the past month on the podcast. It's a tasty bit of goodness to start your month.